My name is Rusty Mackey, and you're listening to The Art of Stability. Hello, my friends. We are back and kicking off season two with a wonderful conversation with Jesse Eubanks, the founder and executive director of Love Thy Neighborhood. You know, today's conversation got me thinking about those times in life when we are surprised by pain. Have you ever been there? Your pain comes out in an unexpected moment and you have no clue how to manage it. Maybe you even embarrassed yourself in the process. I know, sadly, I've been there. In today's episode, Jesse shares so much wisdom about how you should not run away from those moments of pain because they can produce some of the sweetest goodness in our lives. Stay with us and enjoy Redemption Stories with Jesse Eubanks. Jesse, as I have seen you really from afar in a lot of ways, we're old acquaintances, but yeah, not too much time one-on-one. But as I've seen you mainly from afar through social media, through your podcasting, love your podcast, by the way, one of the things that I've seen about you is that you walk this balance between both being relationally sensitive with people, you're caring in your approach. That's really obvious, especially even as you tackle subjects on social media that are sensitive and can be a bit of relational bombs for folks. You seem to navigate those with relational sensitivity. I also noticed that you have this capacity to be detail-oriented, and I even get this sense that you love people through task, through details. And that tension I have found in my own life is hard to walk. So if I could summarize what I appreciate about you the most, I think it'd be in this word of you're thoughtful, maybe even attentive in your relationship. So as we get started today, I'd love to hear, do you see that in your own life? And if so, what's the story behind walking that balance?
Well, first, thank you. That's very kind. Is it accurate? I'm not sure, but I appreciate it. I will say this. I'm very relationally oriented. You know, a lot of that comes out of a lot of wounds that I experienced in my childhood. And I came from a really broken family that, despite their best efforts, just didn't really know how to love each other super well. And so as I got into adulthood, I was a Christian and I'm looking and I'm going, okay, if all of life is supposed to be about relationships, well, then if I don't really know how can I learn how to do relationships better? Mm-hmm. And so it sort of has been like a fixation of mine, a fascination, for 20 something years has been just this desire to learn how to be relationally attuned to people, to understand them, to perceive them. But to be honest, for all the times that I might be relationally sensitive, there's just as many times that, my wife or my kids or my staff or my coworkers have to kind of go like, hey, what you just did there was pretty hurtful, And so, and so in those moments, I try to remember perfection has its place, but the better thing is to be able to learn how to repair. And so there's these great moments of, just trying to pursue people, in terms of, being tuned into details. I have significant ADD. And so, so details can be tricky for me. Kind of like what's in front of me is like kind of what I'm into at that moment, especially if it can grab my imagination. I like to really like get my hands on it and kind of mess with it. And, the way that can kind of play itself out though is, if you take sort of this relational orientation and then this other part of me that's, I wouldn't necessarily say like is details, but it's like, I really try to be thoughtful especially when sensitive topics come up, like I try to bring those two things together. And so, Love That Neighborhood runs an urban missions program for young adults. So it's like, how can we disciple them in a way that's attuned to young adults now, in this year, in this time, in this culture. But then also, even on like our podcasts, you know, we're asking those same things. So on the LTN podcast, you know, we have an episode that we're wrapping production on right now where the gospel meets sex. So it's like, how do we approach this conversation in a way that is going to be life-giving, that it's not going to add more wounds to people that are already experiencing deep wounds in those areas? How can the hope of the gospel come forward in that? And so, I don't know, I'm curious about people.
You know, the thing that I find so interesting about your answer is both of the things that I noticed, the relational attunement, the tuned into details, both of those for you come out of a place of wounding and both come out of a place of limits.
Yeah.
And I think that's just so encouraging to me to be able to see how the Lord has taken that place of pain and he's turned it into a source of giftedness.
Yeah, well, I think though that that's sort of, you know, isn't that like how it works for us in life though? Yeah. It's like, you know, whatever your greatest wounds are, like the Lord loves to write redemption stories. And so oftentimes, like when I, you know, I run an urban missions program, I run an urban ministry. But when I look around at these other executive directors, you know, especially founders, and I go, hey, why did you launch this ministry? Always. It's some pain point in their own story. You know, very rarely is it some scenario in which like they were this fully healthy person and they saw this need and they were like, I'm the one to, it was usually like they're kind of crawling in and they're going, well, I'm the one that's here. I'm going to try to do something. And so I always pay attention to like, What is a person's some of their greatest wounds? Because most likely that's where the Lord's going to do some of the greatest stuff.
Yeah. And how averse are we to our wounds and to our pain when what I hear you saying is that's really where the magic and the redemption happens.
Yeah.
So with that, how have you stepped into actually sitting with your wounds and allowing that redemption story to unfold?
Well, aside from, you know, paying an obscene amount of money to therapists and counselors for the last 15 years. I mean, you know, in all honesty, it is really a combination of learning to establish a handful of very key and intimate relationships that are capable of holding your story. And that it's a context and a place in which you can go and go, hey, this is a part of who I am. And this is what I've done. And sometimes it's like wounds from the past, but sometimes it's the embarrassing thing that you did last night or the thing that you're like, it's humiliating that I'm bringing this up for the 15th time. I really thought I'd be past this by now. Mm-hmm. But it's that ability to have a handful of folks that can hold your story and receive that from you. And that being said, you know, there's limits to what a spouse can offer. There's limits to what friends can offer. And there's even a limit to what counselors can offer or pastors can offer. Like, but there's a need for that diversity of community because all of them in various ways play a healing role. God's at work, you know, through each of them. And so I think the more, you know, for me especially, the more that I am able to learn to sit with a wound without allowing shame to overwhelm me. Mm-hmm. Because shame is the thing that like drives us back into the cave. It drives us into hiding. It drives us into personas. You know, it drives us into, I'm going to use the language to get the applause, or I'm going to behave in ways that are, you know, big and extravagant to try to prove my point when actually people would have understood me if I had just done it without all the drama, the ability to learn to sit with wounds and not be overwhelmed with shame. And my conviction, you know, is that that's only possible when we truly learn how to receive delight from God and other people. I heard somebody say it this way. In Christendom, we talk all the time about we need to love other people, and that's really, really hard work. Mm-hmm. The harder work is learning to be loved by other people. And I think that the more that we grow in our ability to learn to be loved, not in a narcissistic way, but like in a, they see us with honesty, you know, they can talk about the broken, jacked up, screwed up stuff. And they can also talk about the stuff that's like beautiful and good. And so I think our ability to learn to sit in God's delight for us, other people's delight for us, and then return that delight. I think that that heals shame. Yeah. And then out of that, it's like, okay, I can acknowledge that these things are part of who I am. It sucks. It's embarrassing, but it's not going to swallow me.
Yeah. It doesn't define you, right? Because experienced acceptance in those relationships. I love how you put it. They can hold your wounds. They can hold your story. Man, so well said and so much wisdom there. I specifically love that dynamic of not putting all of the pressure on one person to save you.
Yeah, that was that's a lesson learned. That's a lesson learned. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Came out of a wound, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that. So much helpful wisdom. And in regards to thinking of painful moments, moments of instability, would you be willing to share in a specific story for us so we can kind of dive into maybe even some of these pieces of wisdom, how they played out in that story?
Yeah. So years ago, so I have a book coming out in January called How We Relate. And it's a book about the Enneagram and the gospel and Jesus's empathy for us. And, a whole bunch of different things. But I opened the book with this story because it really is a marker in the story of my life. It was a moment. So years ago, you know, you'll remember this building, but years ago, the church that we were both a part of was at this, we had this old elementary school. So there's this small group. I'm up on the third floor of this building. It's like cold. I'm in this room with a bunch of other guys, and we're all going around like sharing our different burdens that we've been carrying. And the guy leading was basically trying to say, hey, you know, when you learn to share about these things out in the open, you won't feel so ashamed about it. So as all that's going on, all these guys are sharing and like, I'm fixing all their problems in my head. Like I know, they're like saying it. And I'm just like, oh yeah, yeah. Well, stop yelling at your wife. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, well, stop freaking out all the time and maybe you won't have that problem. You know, it's like, I'm being very judgy. And so, but then it gets to me and I have like no clarity. I like can't figure out what exactly is going on. I have this blindness about myself. And as I begin sharing, I'm getting more and more and more animated, and I'm talking about disappointments in ministry, and I'm talking about hardships in ministry, and I'm talking about why I'm frustrated, and I'm talking about how I thought things were going to go. And it culminates with me screaming, and that's why I'm mad at God. And I could feel like all the guys in the room kind of pull back. And it was this moment where I began to realize like, oh, I really don't have a whole lot of self-awareness right now. Like I had no notion that all of that was like percolating under the surface. And, you know, around that same time, like, you know, I'm working at a homeless shelter, the staff, like we're telling people about the love of Jesus all day. We secretly don't like each other. You know, my marriage is struggling. We're like in that eighth year stretch, you know, that so many marriages struggle in. And, I've got little kids at home that just need so much from me and I'm exhausted. You know, the ministry's almost going bankrupt. It was like all these things happening. Man, I was just really not great. I was not doing well as a person. My faith wasn't good. My relationships weren't good. My vocation wasn't good. I mean, it was all these things were just like in these sort of shambles. And it was out of that experience so many good things came. Like, it's a really weird thing because I look back at it now with almost a sweetness because there was so much good stuff that came out of it. And God was just at work. And I think that, like, I don't know, Rusty, like that's like one of the things I've been thinking about lately is like so often we have these agendas.
Yeah.
And God's agenda is like, what is best for us? Like that's the agenda. And I don't mean best for us, like the best vacation or like, you know, like the best dynamics in life or what, but like what is it going to take for his love to truly penetrate the totality of who we are? and to set us free from the things that we're blind to. And so I look back on that season that was like really unstable, and I can actually see this evidence of God just doing incredible things.
Yeah. What a beautiful story. And even like you said earlier, this moment of deep pain and the, oh, there it is, seeing it clearly for the first time, but being able to look back all these years later and to view that moment as a sweet moment because of the redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much hope. I hope there's so much hope for those listening. There is for me that the moments of pain we're seeing clearly right now, that the Lord is not done. And Jesse, I do wonder, as much as you look back on that moment with sweetness, what was your experience in the moment of screaming out, and that's why I'm mad at God?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't the only time that I began yelling in that season of life. I heard somebody say that sometimes anger is how the truth escapes jail. And and I think that, like, in that season, I had to let go of my idealism of how I thought things should go. And I had to learn to grieve that certain parts of my dream were never going to come true. But that my fixation on grasping for the ideal was simultaneously the thing I was sacrificing was being grateful for what I did have.
Yeah.
And, and so, understandably, like, it was a pretty embarrassing moment, you know, that moment of like, I'm being experienced as emotionally unstable because I was emotionally unstable. And I'm being experienced by other people around me as sort of erratic and a little not thinking clearly. And it's because it was true. It was a true expression of where I was. And God was not fazed by that. God was not surprised by that, even though the people around me were. But there were some people in the room that, you know, to this day, they're dear friends, and they were able to be with me in that moment.
Yeah, they became some of those people who could hold,
hold
that pain.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Man, so what did you do from that moment? You mentioned the letting go of idealism, the getting honest, you know, letting the truth out of jail with some of the anger. Can you think back on some other steps that you took that helped you in the process of letting go?
Yeah. I think that for me, the biggest thing was I started seeing a guy named Rich Plass. And Rich is supposed to be retired, but Rich has not gone quietly into the night. And so he still seems to have his hands in lots of things. But Rich sat with me and my wife for 3 years, almost every single week. And initially the conversations were around sort of our marriage and the stuff we were working through as a couple. But as time went on, you know, inevitably you come to realize like, oh wait, these things are struggles actually because of the lives that we've lived and the stories that we've lived through and the things that we've experienced. And Rich began to help us explore some of those things and understand how they were influencing our current life and our current dynamics. And then, as part of that, honestly, the other thing, some of the other factors were, I started meeting with, two other guys every week. I have continued that practice to today, you know, so we're probably like, man, I don't even know, you know, at least a decade in to that practice. So I needed guys that I could be honest and open with on a consistent basis. I needed to to invest more into being a healthy husband. I needed to embrace my identity as a dad, and then just, what does it mean to follow Jesus? And in this context, and this was a really hard one as well. My wife and I built a lot of our life around our passion for urban ministry. But one of the things that we had to change because of some different dynamics in life was we actually had to move out of our neighborhood. You know, we were living in this low-income, high-crime neighborhood. And we ended up moving to this quiet neighborhood where I couldn't sleep for the first 2 weeks because it was so quiet. I was positive that like something was wrong. And so even that was like part of that death of identity, that death of idealism was like, Lord, I thought we were going to be in this neighborhood for the rest of our lives. And here we are, you know, leaving. And, you know, I'm leading this urban ministry and now I'm not even living in the neighborhood. And how do I reconcile all of that? And we just try to prove ourselves. You know, we do these things to sort of reinforce identities or reinforce innocence, you know, our ways of just not needing God. And God sometimes just has to pry those things from our hands in his kindness. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. There's so much tension and mystery in what I'm hearing you share. There's a abstaining from a personal letting go of certain things, living in the neighborhood that you dreamed you'd be in, doing that type of work in that type of space. Now all of a sudden you're doing that type of work, but living in a different space.
Yeah.
There's the engaging and the pressing into more relationships, right? And saying, I need more of this vulnerability, more of this emptiness on display. So you're doing a lot, but then you're also saying, yeah, the Lord had to pry some stuff out of my hands. And isn't that just the way it goes? We just, we do what we can, but we ultimately just have to wait and trust the Lord to do what he does.
Yeah.
Dan, thank you for sharing that story. I'm deeply encouraged by it. So thank you for it. And it doesn't surprise me that most of your answers were relationally oriented, relationally to God, relationally to others. Even how your work shift in your living situation shift was a relational shift. So Jesse, speaking of relationships, I would love to hear what you're currently living into in your relationship with Jesus. What are some specific ways that you're practicing enjoying Jesus in that relationship right now?
Yeah. I think, you know, I'll be honest, like, you know, the last few years has just been just so difficult. You know, I think that for us as a country, it's been difficult. I think the world's been hard, but, you know, our church went through kind of this huge implosion 5-6 years ago. And there was a fair bit of shrapnel that kind of got lodged inside of me that I'm still kind of working through, you know? And so one of the things that I've been thinking about this last week, and I've heard this from, you know, it's one of those things where you sort of hear a little bit of it and it like doesn't quite get in. And then you go to church and there's a sermon that like is along the same theme. And then a friend brings it up and you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of what I've been thinking about this last week. We can remember God's faithfulness by looking to the past, and we can anticipate God's fulfillment by looking to the future, but we can only experience God's presence here in the present.
Yeah.
And so, so the thing I'm doing to try to enjoy Jesus is to learn to be present, be here now. So it's easy for me to sort of either get stuck reminiscing on the past. And usually often because of my personality, it's easy to fixate on the pain of the past or to dream about some idealistic future. But in both those scenarios, I'm not present.
Yeah.
And so the more that I can grow in my capacity to realize, like, Jesus is with me right now.
Yeah.
Right now. In the mess that I am, you know, in the scattered mental thoughts I've got today, my busy schedule, in the unresolved conversations I've got with family members, or the thing I need to do for the friend that I'm resistant to, like all the things, but Jesus is present here and now. And the more that I'm able to do that, the more I can find delight in who he is, and I can, but I can also find sort of a clarity of trust that I don't need to worry about the next 5 months, the next 5 years. Jesus is going to lead me in the next, moment by moment as I need him to. Mm. He'll give me what it is that I need. So that's one thing. Okay. So yeah. Really focusing on being present now. And then there's another thought that came to mind as well, which was, so Richard Rohr, he writes, how we relate to God always reveals how we relate to people, and how we relate to people is an almost an infallible indicator of how we relate to God and let God relate to us. The whole Bible is a school of relationship. And so, like, if you summarize it, you know, it's this idea of how we relate is how we relate. So yeah. I've got my personality. I got one style. I apply it to God. I apply it now in this podcast. I apply it to my wife. And usually when I talk about that, I end up talking about the Enneagram. But the other thing that I've been thinking about lately is actually this other piece. There's this guy, Alan Guinness. He wrote a book, The Friendship Factor. And in that, he says that friendship is composed of shared experiences in mutual vulnerability.
Okay.
And I've been thinking a lot lately about, I do a lot of that vulnerability piece. I mean, you know, I'm doing it now. Like I'm very sure. comfortable with like, hey, kind of here's what I'm thinking and here's where my heart is. But man, that shared experience piece can actually be a little elusive for me. You know, a lot of guys, a lot of my male friends, the vulnerability piece is uncomfortable for them. It's like, let's go do something together. So let's go on a road trip, or let's go shoot guns, or like, let's go, you know, grab a drink or whatever. And the vulnerability piece is elusive. I'm kind of that opposite. And so, so the thing that I've really been thinking about lately is, so Jesus, if I'm doing a lot of this vulnerability thing with you, I'm sharing, I'm being honest, I'm trying to let you in, I'm trying to reflect on who you are, you're giving yourself to me, but also, what does it mean to have a shared experience with Jesus? And that looks like following him, obeying him, walking with him. And usually that's a downward motion. So usually it's not into positions of power and influence and, you know, fame, but it's usually actually into the forgotten places, the margins. Yeah. So the more that I can engage with Jesus vulnerably, and the more that I can engage with Jesus by having shared experiences with him. So that's, I'm kind of like working on that right now. That's like, that's kind of what I'm thinking about.
Man, I love those categories that you shared. And one thing that's just screaming at me in my head is this dynamic of comparing shared experience with guy friends to shared experience with Jesus. And 100% agree with you. It's this downward mobility. Is going into obscurity because that's where Jesus is, right? But also, as we're moving away from power, this idea that we're also moving towards childlikeness, which means also playfulness, you know? So thinking of your personality, it's much easier to like, hey, let's get together and like dump the hard stuff on each other. And let's really just wait around in that, right? I'm curious, if you have a hard time, if you would say, I have a hard time being playful when my shared experience with people, and if that's true and I relate how I relate, do I then have a hard time being playful with Jesus or even experiencing the playfulness of Jesus?
Yeah, I think especially I can get kind of two things. You know, I sort of have like an intense disposition. It's kind of just always kind of been a part of my way of being. And then especially, and then if pain kind of comes in, it can really swallow. So like the seriousness and the pain can kind of swallow up the fun and levity and joy. And, and so I've got all these moments where like, I really enjoy sort of playfulness. Like if you listen to the Enneacast, like, you know, we play these really ridiculous games, you know, with our guests and like, and, you know, and that was my idea. Like I wanted to do that, but then I do have these other sort of corners of my life where, you know, like it's a worship service. I find songs about lament and grief much, much easier to connect with than songs that are about joy and celebration. Songs of joy and celebration are a discipline for me to practice and to begin to sort of live into. You know, I'm like, oh, here's the good stuff. The good stuff is like the dark pain songs, you know, and the stuff that's like, oh, that's kind of, you know, that's just like Christian radio CCM stuff. Like, you know, that, like, it feels like less true, but that's not true. That's my own personality getting in the way of experiencing joy. And that's a real tragedy. You know, a friend of mine says that the ultimate trajectory of the Christian life is toward joy. And I think that like we have to be able to to own that and step towards that, and recognize, you know, what's getting in the way. So I'm reading this book, The Power of Fun by Catherine Price. It's not Christian book. It's a great book. But it's literally about that. Like, what are the things in life that just bring fun and joy and levity? And, but like, there are some of us in life, like, you know, whether it's life story, personality, disposition, like, we have to do the work of, I got to lighten this load. I can't live under this kind of somber seriousness, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Trauma also inhibits our capacity for creativity, playfulness.
Yes.
As I talk with more and more Christians, I hear this theme of like, I just want to be present, be here now. And I think there really is a reform happening in, within the church in the West to a degree, where we're rediscovering some ancient practices of contemplative prayer, attentive presence, spiritual direction, even the resurgence of that. It seems to be something that people are being drawn to, I would say, by the Holy Spirit, in my humble estimation. So with that in mind, knowing that a lot of folks are trying to be more present, how's it going? What are the obstacles that you're finding that makes it hard to be present to Jesus? And how would you encourage those who are on that same journey with you?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I didn't connect this until this moment we were talking about it. One of the things that Catherine Price talks about in that book, The Power of Fun, is she says, they do all these polls about like, how do we define fun? What are the conditions under which a person is most likely to say that was incredibly fun, incredibly joyful? Huh. But one of the things that does come up is, she says, when we're having the most fun, we completely lose track of time, which is to say, we are utterly in the moment in such a way that we are not in the past and we're not in the future. We're fully present. Like a very tangible way, like for anybody that is a musician, if you play music and you're with other musicians and you begin to jam and you're trying out ideas and you begin to just kind of play riffs, and there's a playfulness within the music in which all that exists is the music and working together and being in that moment. So I think that there is something about the ability to experience joy and the ability to be present in the moment. I think that even the research is showing like those things are linked. The other stuff that I would say, you know, this is how it works for me. So I told you I've got ADD. So I have a visual timer. And my visual timer, literally, I will like set it, and then I'll go sit in a chair, and I'll just don't do anything until the timer runs out. And every time that my mind wanders, I try to bring it back. And if it wanders again, I try to bring it back. So there's that. I also think, while it is true that we have a particular unique joy that we experience in Christ that we can't experience in any other relationship, I also think that we have to be able to experience fun and levity and joy in our peer-to-peer relationships as human beings, and that fuels a joy in Christ. And you could flip the inverse. If all of our other relationships are kind of miserable and hollow and not well, and they're not thriving, and we're fighting and we're not trusting, it's really, really difficult to go, okay, I'm experiencing total joy, you know, with Christ. There's just a connection between those two things.
Yeah. We relate how we relate.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for you taking the time to be with me today, and I have found this conversation delightful, and I hope others do as well. So thank you for honoring us with your time and for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Rusty. Thanks so much.
All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed the first episode of Season 2. Check out the show notes to find Jesse on social media, as well as a link to his new book, How We Relate, Understanding God, Yourself, and Others Through the Lens of the Enneagram. You will want to pick up a copy today. The Art of Stability is a production of Steadfast Ministries that exists to help you stay grounded in Christ to lead with confidence and clarity. Head over to steadfastmin.com, that's steadfastmin.com, to see all the ways I help you do just that. The cover art was created by Brian Bim.
Music created and performed by Rob Main, and the music was recorded and produced by the Asterisk Company. Thank you for joining me today, and I'll see you next time on The Art of Stability.